We have got Senator Mark Schessler, who hails out of Ritzville, Washington, on the line with us tonight for a Washington State legislative update. Now, I want to let you know that Mark Schessler is in the 9th Legislative District, which encompasses Adams County, Assotin, Franklin, Garfield, a small portion of Spokane County, as well as Whitman County. Senator Schessler happens to sit on some real sweet committees. We're talking about the Ways and Means, Labor, Commerce, and Tribal Affairs, Environment, Energy, and Technology. And with that said, please, let's issue a hearty Right Spokane Perspective welcome for none other than Senator Mark Schessler. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Well, doing well, but I think you missed one or two of my counties after redistricting.
Oh, okay.
We've added Lincoln County, and we still have Adams, part of Franklin. We've added Columbia County, kept Garfield, Assotin, Whitman, and I have, next year I'll have 50,000 new constituents in Spokane County. So it's a shift. Some areas I've represented earlier in my career, some are new, but I look forward to it.
Yeah, you bet. Well, that is a very big geographic area there with thousands and thousands of people added to the redistricting as a result, and I wish you well, for sure. Now, I understand that we're going to be touching on some of the oil taxes that are being discussed that are in place right now, as well as some runaway inflation. And I'm telling you, if there's anybody who would definitely be in the know, it would definitely be somebody sitting on the likes of the Ways and Means, Labor, Commerce, Environment, Energy, and Technology committees. You bet. So please, Mark, take it away.
Well, really, one of the interesting things is we have a generation of staff and policymakers that have never lived through high inflation, high interest rate years, fuel shortages. I talked to a really great staff attorney one day. He was born in 1973 when we had the Arab oil embargo. Well, I had a driver's license in 1973, and I understood it. So we've got a generation of policymakers that haven't seen this before, and the staff that supports them. There was a lot of people last winter said, oh, this is just temporary. It's not going to be a big deal. Those of us that lived through the Jimmy Carter era know that it was a big deal.
Yes, it sure was.
The other thing is the gas tax is... it's not popular, but at the end of the day, we know that having one of the higher gas taxes in America is protected by the 18th Amendment. It's not going to be diverted. But what we have now is the up-and-coming gas taxes without roads.
Mm-hmm. You know, on our show, I've actually, even though our show is not normally in favor of taxes a whole lot, especially since we know government typically is getting plenty of revenue in, as far as the process is concerned and the purpose of user fees, which I actually like user fees, so it's not just taxing everyone for something you don't use, and a gas tax is a good way, I think, of funding transportation projects, because then you're taxing people that will use those facilities. And so I think it's a good way to tax. I think it's too high, but it is a good way of separating those budgets. But we're seeing those budgets, like you said, not really being used for the purpose of a user's fee, because now you've got people paying a tax for infrastructure that they're not using with that user fee.
Well, the average motorist won't understand that the cap and tax proposal will come through the back door in higher fuel prices, greater inflation. And for most of us, we'll have to drive to I-5 to see a project. And the automobile owners, truck owners, will watch people under 18 ride transit for free and ferries for free. Mm-hmm. Then you throw in the low-cost fuel standards, which currently we think could go from 12 cents to 36 cents with a policy center study that no real benefit to the environment. And it too will never get to highways and other important features of our system. So it's really a false confidence in environmental policy that is going to stick it to the average taxpayer, plain and simple. That's why California has some of the most expensive fuel in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Now, wasn't there a almost 60 cent or a 60 cent increase that went into effect beginning of July?
Well, that's the cap and tax proposal.
Okay.
That was supported by big business and some of big oil, and it's supposed to fund everything from A to Z, and we'll never really see it in Eastern Washington. That is a huge problem. It's going to take effect. They're going to have to buy these credits. Do you really think for 1 minute that British Petroleum is going to reduce their dividend to save us money, or that their renewable fuels division isn't going to cash in on it?
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, you definitely aren't going to be expecting anything from the private sector, but I do understand that there are some state governments right now that are considering give backs to the taxpayers in a couple of different forms. We know already that Governor Inslee has basically said, nope, there ain't going to be no gas tax holiday in the state of Washington. Are you been hearing anything in the latest legislative circles here lately that there may be some tax relief coming to the citizens in this state because, again, the gas prices as well as inflation?
Well, in my 8 years as Senate Majority Leader and Minority Leader, I learned that if one option doesn't work, let's try opening another door. If the governor doesn't believe the savings will be passed on, I issued a press release about a week or two ago and said, okay, the simplest, quickest way to get relief to every taxpayer would be a 1% cut in the sales tax.
Oh, yeah, that would be nice.
And it's very simple with all of the technology we have to implement that. Now, if you're a retailer in the Spokane Valley, Pullman, or Clarkston, that lower sales tax makes you more competitive. Liberals tell us that the sales tax is regressive. Well, let's cut the state portion. We could cut that until the second quarter, third quarter into next year and see what the economy looks like. Quickly and easily with the tax relief that small business and the average citizen needs. Property tax relief would be great. Don't get me wrong. I think it'd be wonderful. But, you know, your property tax statements are only 6 months or a year behind. Sales tax would be immediate. That's why I proposed it as a smart alternative for the average taxpayer. I don't really expect Jay Inslee wants to give any taxpayer a break, but I learned a long time ago. Well, if the answer is no, let's try another door.
Sure. Well, I'm hoping that you are going to be joined by a lot more Republicans over there in the state house than just yourself at this particular point, because it definitely looks as though you're going to have to bring a volume number of people before you're going to get the governor's attention. That's for sure. I mean, you know, again, it's just based on what we saw during the last legislative session where, you know, of course, the state was sitting on $15 billion plus in surplus revenue, only to have the Democrat-controlled legislature create new programs, expansions of existing programs that are now going to have to be sustained into the future, and it ate up all of that surplus.
No, they did an excellent job of eating it up, and the average taxpayer will never see the services, let alone tax relief. That's
right.
That's a huge problem. And what we're really looking for is reinforcements. 4 votes in the Senate. I think we look at 10 in the House, 8 in the House, something like that, that would get us there to where we know how to govern without the governor's office. It's called the referendum clause.
Okay.
And you don't have, we learned in the 90s, we didn't have to work with Gary Locke when we had majorities. We simply used or threatened to use the referendum clause. If you don't like this, Governor, we'll go to the people with a referendum, let them decide if they want their taxes lowered.
Sure. Well, it's my understanding, Senator, that the Democrats would much prefer utilizing the old emergency legislation button. You know what I'm saying? So that everything is made initiative and referendum proof now.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we saw that after the 2004 election when Dino Rossi was clearly robbed, that everything had an emergency clause just in case Dino Rossi came back as governor. And it bordered on ridiculous. There's legitimate policies that, hey, they can't wait. But by and large, many, many do not need an emergency clause. It is really tough to get enough signatures on an initiative to force it to a referendum.
Right. Well, especially after the 2020 election, where now you, the number of valid signatures just to get an initiative over the threshold there is, you know, nearing 400,000, my understanding now.
Yeah, I think there's always a percentage that you want for overage for mistakes.
Sure.
And if grassroots is tough, and try to find signature gatherers that want to work. That's even getting tough.
Yes, absolutely. Considering the political climate that we've got out, or the social justice climate that we've got out there in the community.
Right. But
sure.
But with this effort, I mean, I think that all the initiative process and this group out there, Let's Go Washington, pushing 11 different initiatives on some of the topics we've been talking about here today. It's one way for the citizens to at least tell the legislature through signature gathering efforts, even if we can't get them on the ballot, because we've had some problems with courts in Washington state and some legislative blockade. Even representatives out of the 3rd legislative district here in Spokane who sues the voters for passing initiatives. So unfortunately, we got to take a break. So we're going to be right back with current Senator Mark Schessler, and we're going to continue to talk about Washington state policy, how it's going to affect you, and what the future looks like. We'll be right back.
You're looking at your ballot and realize you need more information about candidates and issues, there are two organizations that you can check out. The Citizens Alliance for Property Rights. Check them out at www.capr.us. And then, We Believe We Vote is also a great source from the Christian perspective on candidates and issues, so log on to www.webelievewevote.com. Again, that's www.capr.us and www.webelievewevote.com. And welcome back from the break, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for rejoining Mike and Tim on your Thursday Washington State Legislative episode here on Right Spokane Perspective. I hope everybody out there is safe and sane. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you are joining us a little bit late in today's broadcast here, you missed out on the first half, don't fret. There is redemption. You can catch us on a rebroadcast tonight at 9 p.m. on the fabulous 630 or 96.5 FM.
Or you can grab that good old-fashioned internet, use your podcast service of your choosing, type in Right Spokane Perspective, and go through those archives and find shows that you'd like other people to hear, especially right now with ballots in hand. Share some of those candidate interviews so that people can make an informed decision, because of course, you know, those flyers are coming in the mail, and every candidate loves you, loves America, and is going to keep it safe. So since they all look the same, listen to those interviews on Right Spokane Perspective, share them with friends. We jumped off into the break, and you know, I didn't want to put Senator Mark Schessler on the spot like he has a crystal ball of what the future looks like.
No doubt.
But, you know, definitely the future belongs to those who show up. And right now is where people need to show up, filling out those election ballots and maybe gathering signatures on those initiatives at Let's Go Washington. Senator Mark Schessler, give the listeners out there an idea of what the future might look like with, you know, bills that are already on the table that didn't make it through the legislature because it was campaign year, and you've got senators and House members that maybe are pretty radical and wanted to push some things through but have to wait until after the election. Give us an idea of what those things might be.
Well, you know, we've seen several years of total liberal government, but on the conservative side, curbing emergency powers, I think, is guaranteed to be one of the things that comes out of the chute if we have a much different looking legislature. It's absurd to be going on 800 days. Nobody believes it anymore.
Oh, you bet.
I think that we need some things to give people confidence in elections. I think that is something that either the governor gets on board or it could be a referendum.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, tax relief is necessary. And if we look at the transportation package last year, it was the first transportation package of significance that was total party line votes. Never, ever had there been that situation. Well, they're not as smart as they think they are because they didn't bond the money, because that would have required some Republican support to reach the bonding threshold. So all of the cap and tax gimmicks can be wiped out by a legislature anytime by a simple majority and moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So the really dumb ideas, the spending that doesn't get people where they need to go, it can be changed. So there's an exciting set of prospects out there with a different looking legislature. Those are just a few.
Oh, you bet. Let's talk a little bit on inflation. You know, what are the revenuers here in Washington State reporting back to the legislature and the state Senate?
Well, we grew by $1.5 billion in the last forecast for the remainder of this biennium, and I think we're a little north of $2 billion with our 4-year outlook, which our forecast always errs to the cautious side in the next biennium because it's a lot more challenging to predict than the next three quarters. So there is revenue to do these things, and it's not out of the question to do things we've talked about on this show and others. The scary part about it is right now, Jay Inslee is negotiating contracts behind closed doors with no discovery available with his best friends, the public employee unions. And he'll negotiate a bill that is, or a contract that's always giving away a little bit more, not just a reasonable COLA, but always a little more giveaway. And whether you agree or disagree with those contracts, and I've clearly disagreed with several, you never get an up or down vote on the contract. It is buried in the bowels of the budget. I've told city employees, you know, I think I can vote for your contract this year, but I can't vote for a budget that does a whole lot of other things I object to.
Right.
So the daylight needs to be shined on these negotiations, and it's really sad that you can FOIA my office. You can FOIA any other member of the legislature, the governor, in a heartbeat, but not the negotiations with our tax dollars. If we were open like Spokane has been, or Lincoln County, or the Pullman School District, if the governor is treating public employees poorly, I want to see the offer. If the governor is giving away the farm, I think we have a right to know as well.
Sure. You betcha. That is for sure. Boy, I tell you, you know, having been in city government, that, you know, was definitely one of the things that lacked transparency until such time that a new council member come on to the city council. One of the things that he ended up doing was effected a couple of charter changes, one of which was transparency during public employee negotiations.
Right.
Unfortunately, that is basically wrapped up in legal land right now.
Oh, yeah.
Which, well, then a lot of these is fixes, very, very disappointing for sure.
A lot of these fixes are. And you know, it really shocks me in watching like legislative hearings or interviews with executive branch bureaucrats where really, you have legislators that are trying to, you know, basically give directives to the executive branch to better serve the citizens. And so you have representatives of these citizens trying to do so, and executive branches are blockading information to where the legislature almost has to sue the bureaucracies to get down to the bottom of where's the money going, who's it actually serving, and can we do a better job, right?
Well, I think there's this incredible hypocrisy, especially in the Supreme Court and some of the lower courts. On one
now, that's
hand,
the Washington Supreme Court, right?
Right. Washington Supreme Court, the hypocrisy is amazing. They said the legislature cannot exempt themselves from open public records FOIA. But they run their operation. You cannot do an open public records request of the state Supreme Court. And you cannot get... They're going to be hearing eventually, I think, you know, more of these cases about open public bargaining. And yet they protect themselves from it. I have a real problem with that level of hypocrisy, because I think that the sunshine on the bargaining process with our tax dollars clearly fits something that should be subject to discovery.
Oh, you bet. Yes,
absolutely.
All right, Senator, let's go ahead and kind of head in the direction of labor and commerce at this point. I see that the Commerce Department is, again, doling out millions and millions and millions of dollars on various programs. One of the programs that is impactful to the city of Spokane, I understand that the city just received approximately $24 million from the Department of Commerce to deal with affordable housing,
homelessness
and stuff like this. So you got any thoughts going on there?
Well, I really hope that it goes to the responsible members of the private sector. I think government is a terrible delivery system for housing. And when I see, you know, faith-based and conservative groups getting the grants, I breathe a little easier. Mm-hmm. If it's just throwing money at it, there would be no homelessness in Seattle. So I'm anxious to watch and see how this happens.
No homeless in Seattle.
Needs to be solved.
You got to come to Spokane, Senator, because you know, we've got they call it Camp Hope, we call it Camp Dope. You know, it's got like 600 residents. It's a growing camp. It's operated by apparently the self-proclaimed leader of the camp just moved to Spokane a year ago, and we're looking at, you know, drugs, human trafficking, all the stuff going on. And that's just one camp. There's other locations where we have encampments, and the city of Spokane has been just dumping money into the homeless situation, and the problem seems to grow. It's almost like if you want more of it, you subsidize it, right?
Well, that's absolutely right, and that's why I mentioned Seattle, because they've been throwing truckloads of money at this for a long time. Mm-hmm. But they don't believe in tough love. They don't believe in law and order. And if you don't have some tough love and respect the law, it's not going to work.
And respecting the law, I agree with that. We've got to respect the law. And here in Spokane, this Camp Dope is actually located on WashDOT property. I know that if, let's say you and Mike decided to go in on a three-way venture, we're going to buy a piece of property, we're going to build a triplex, and, you know, eventually we'll move on to that. But we haven't built the triplex yet, so we just allow an encampment of 600 people to hang out there. The city of Spokane and Washington State and the county government is going to take away our property after they fine us into bankruptcy. How can government house that kind of a situation on their property with no accountability? I mean, you're a legislator. Where's the accountability for state bureaucracy getting away with something that none of us could in our wildest dreams get away with?
Well, we've ignored the law at all mm-hmm. levels. You know, when you look at the Bible, the Quran, all say thou shalt not steal. Common law, thou shalt not steal. We forgive it. We have laws on the books that are scarcely enforced with the homeless community. And tough love, enforcing the laws we have to be part of it. We have ignored that with the mentality of liberals, and we've gotten more of it. There is clearly a poverty industrial complex that operates in this state and nationwide. If you cure homelessness, if you reduce it, they're out of jobs. I really believe that they believe they've got a permanent gig making great money for nonprofits, non-government organizations, mm-hmm. constantly. If you solve poverty, what are these poverty pimps going to do?
Right.
They have to get a real job.
You right. Betcha. Well, and basically what we're looking at right here in like the 5-county area, I believe it does include one or two of the counties that you might represent, but there's like $145 million that they're waiting for more allocations for the homeless situation in the region. And to me, that sounds like a massive amount of money when we know that we're already funding through taxation, you know, upwards of $60,000 to $90,000 per homeless individual that's out there being served. I mean, that's more than most people in Eastern Washington make every year.
Well, and that's what we refer to as a poverty industrial complex.
Right.
They live off of these things. They feed off of each other. And you're absolutely right. On a per-person basis, we could put them up in their own homes. But we saw an amazing thing last session in the capital budget. One legislative district was doing tiny homes for veterans that would otherwise be potentially homeless. They needed about $130,000 per tiny home. Mm-hmm. The same time, we met with Habitat for Humanity. They can put a family in a home for about $80,000. Now, where do you want your tax dollars to go? Habitat for Humanity or government-run housing?
Right.
Pretty easy solution.
Yep, pretty easy choice.
We put, for the first time, significant resources toward Habitat for Humanity or similar groups that actually get something done at an affordable level. So if you can put a family into a 2 or 3-bedroom home through Habitat for Humanity for $80,000 bucks, or you can put one of them in a tiny home. for 130. It's insane.
Well, it's insane, and it's also not building future housing that is going to be, you know, something that, for one, the government can collect taxes on, but it's not tiny. How long is tiny homes really going to be a real estate asset? How many people can raise a family in a house that's much, basically, it's a camper.
Yeah, you bet.